to your testimony, please.
My name is Melvine Bird, and I'm affiliated with Clitheroe FASD Prevention Program. Is that what you mean? When you say state? Okay. My testimony is, as an ex-offender of Highland Mountain Correctional Center, getting into the FASD Clitheroe program has been very good for me, and it's a very good success rate because of its ongoing care as leaving. When the women leave Highland Mountain, they give them very good information in the group, and it's just the ongoing care that I feel should be focused on, and that's why they really need the budget. That's all I have to say.
And thank you for your testimony. I would also like to say that if any person or any people out in the public that are going to testify, if you have written comments that you would like for us to also consider, if you could fax them to us, and our fax number is 465-6813. Next we have, and I'm not sure I can even attempt to pronounce that, but I believe is the last name Nguyen?
Nguyen. Nguyen.
Please, if you'd proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Tung Nguyen, and I'm an active participant with the FASD Prevention Program. First, I'd like to say how grateful I am for the program. There are many contributing factors with the program that has helped me be successful in staying on the right path to right living. There's educational videos and literature that's provided on FASD that are very informational. I have a chance to process my thoughts and feelings in one-on-one sessions. They're important because others that aren't familiar with addictions and the behaviors that come along with it, they don't really understand the extent of addiction. And in the groups, too, which are offered, I'm able to share and relate with others. And a lot of times I lose sight of my goals, and as a direct result of support groups, I'm able to refocus. And there are several incentives. I've received bus tokens and vouchers. It made the steps I had to take a lot easier to find work, and now I'm employed and I have a business of my own, and it's going well. That's pretty much it. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am, and we appreciate your testimony. Next, we go to Mira Kohler.
Thank you. My name is Mira Kohler. I'm the president and CEO of Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, and I would like to testify on House Bill 67. Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, also known as ABEC, serves 22,000 Alaskans in 52 villages across Alaska. We essentially represent 44% of Alaska's village residents. Our electric consumers pay on average more than 40 cents a kilowatt hour. Even when PCE is taken out of the equation, the actual out-of-pocket cost to them is more than 30 cents. Here in Anchorage, my home electricity costs 10.4 cents a kilowatt hour right now. A year ago, it was 10.3 cents, so it went up by about 1%. Our cost of fuel went up by 46 cents a gallon on average last year. That translates to almost 4 cents a kilowatt hour, while PCE went down by almost that much. So to the village resident, their monthly electric bill rose by almost 8 cents a kilowatt hour. Imagine for a moment what your life would be like in Juneau if Anchorage and Fairbanks saw an 8 cent a kilowatt hour increase, more than 75% in 1 year. This year, our governor has tried to do the right thing. He recognized that high energy costs are breaking the backs of rural Alaskans. So he proposed fully funding PCE to the tune of $20.7 million in FY06. He proposed that $11.5 million come out of the PCE endowment fund and the rest from general funds and NPRA funds. I understand that there are no surplus NPRA funds available, and the Finance Budget Subcommittee has chosen to use general funds only to the extent that it provides for PCE to be funded at $15.7 million. This will pay PCE at the 75% level for FY06. And if today's high oil prices hold for the year, that level will probably represent less than 60% funding. It's a sad commentary that the state's budget surplus emanating from the high cost of crude oil is being carved up in Juneau for everything but the most basic of human needs, energy costs in rural Alaska. I have heard that it's not so bad. Gas prices in Anchorage have only gone up 20 to 30 cents, but that's the advantage of being on the road system. In rural Alaska, we not only have the enormous increase in commodity prices, we also have the commensurate increase in transportation costs. AVEX cost of fuel went up 19 cents in 2003 and 46 cents in 2004. I shudder to think what it will be this year, but current prices are up 30 cents from last year. There is no reason why struggling rural communities should be denied full PCE. At full funding of $20.7 million, it still only covers 20% of the cost of electricity in rural Alaska. This is clearly laid out in the AEA's PCE report for FY04, which shows that the high cost of producing electricity in the PCE-eligible communities was more than $100 million. I urge the Finance Committee to do the right thing. Restore PCE funding for FY06 to $20.7 million and make up the balance from general funds. Remember that the health of urban Alaska is very much intertied with the health of rural Alaska. Every dollar that must pay for electricity is a dollar that cannot be spent with services from Anchorage and Fairbanks. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
And Mara, thank you for your comments. Next, we will move to Ben Engel. Angel.
Hello, my name is Ben Angel. I'm not really affiliated with any group, but I did want to come and speak. Over the last 18 months, I've worked outside the state, first for an American contractor at our new U.S. Air Force base in Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan, and later as a technical assistance contractor for FEMA as disaster relief in Alabama following Hurricane Ivan. I returned to Alaska of my own free will and accordance with great enthusiasm about a month ago. The reason for this lengthy introduction is to emphasize the point I am a product of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I could have worked in Seattle, in New Orleans, in Arkansas, but I returned. After all, I trained at UAF to solve the engineering problems unique to the state, and so my eventual return only made sense. The civil engineering programs at UAF and UAA are vital to the ambitions and dreams of our citizens, who not only want a more vital economic future for Alaska, but they also want it done right, without significant impact to our quality of life. Today, the company I work for, quite frankly, is in need of more Alaska-qualified engineering talent, and with as many projects that are coming up in this state, this need is not going to go away anytime soon. That need is met through the good graces of our university system, alongside the need for nurses, business majors, and instructors for our children. Funding for the university is not a trivial issue for our future, and it can't be jobbed out to other states with the same return. I therefore urge the funding of the university at the level requested for this year's budget. Thank you.
And thank you, Ben. Next, we will move to Jamie Lang.
Hi, I'm Jamie Lang from Alaska Breast Cancer Advocacy Partners, and I'm commenting on House Bill 67. Governor Murkowski had proposed a $1 million budget enhancement for fiscal year 2006, and part of that money goes to the breast and cervical health care cancer program for women who are unable to afford treatment. In those, in the screenings, it's for breast exams, pelvic exams, pap smears for women 18 to 64, and then screening mammograms for women age 50 to 64. The additional funds will increase the women being served by 3,000, and without that additional funding, women will be turned away for treatment because they don't have insurance. And I'm commenting because I think that they need to keep the money there to keep being able to screen younger women, and they should not change the age limit that they screen women. And early detection saves lives, and being diagnosed earlier saves lives. And I'm here as a young breast cancer survivor that was diagnosed at age 31. Sorry, that's all I have to say.
And thank you, Jamie, for your testimony. These are the issues I think that we as legislators need to continue to hear. With that, we'll move on to, I believe it's Ronnie Sullivan.
Good afternoon. My name is Ronnie Sullivan. I'm the director of Southern Region EMS Council. It's headquartered here in Anchorage. I just want to speak in support of continued full funding for a couple of lines in the budget that you folks are considering at this time. One of those is Community Health and EMS, which is the state organization that coordinates the activities of emergency medical services statewide, including the very important provision to fully fund the poison control centers and allow that important opportunity for those of us who need to access that information immediately. Stable funding is very, very important for organizations that focus their efforts on readiness. We always hope and plan that if we ever have to call 911, the folks that come to respond to that call will be fully trained, well-equipped, and ready to respond. Readiness isn't something that you fund after you need it. It's something we have to look at ahead of time, and those are the issues that we grapple with day to day. I would like to encourage you to increase the grants to EMS regions line in this budget. The funding for these programs has been flat since 1991. And if you think about that in comparison to your household budget, I think any of us would be challenged with trying to maintain what we do based on the income of 15 years ago. The consumer price index in that period of time has increased by over 41%, and the employment cost index has gone up over 60%, but we're operating with the same amount of money. Those funds pay for important things like EMS training, equipment, communications, management assistance, resources, and in all ways continue to keep emergency medical services ready to respond throughout the state of Alaska. In some instances, they pay for insurance and gasoline for those vehicles that are coming to your aid. I would urge your support and wish you luck in all of the endeavors that you're grappling with at this time. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
And Ms. Sullivan, thank you for your testimony that we've heard here tonight. Next, we'll move on to Brooke Taylor.
Hello, I'm here as a concerned citizen. I'm speaking about the Alaska Breast and Cervical Health Check, the $1.8 million funding. I think it's really important that we keep this money. These type of screenings have been proven to save lives, and these kind of cancers can hit at any range of age. There's ones that are more likely, but especially in your younger years. I'm 25 myself, and coming out of college and starting your career, you're either not making a lot of money or you're starting out with a business that's new and maybe can't provide you insurance. And the thought of detecting a lump on a self-exam is scary enough, but then you think about the person then having to face that they don't have insurance and what are they going to do about it, and the relief when they find out that the state provides funding that will allow them to get the screening that could save their lives and not make finding a lump a death sentence, or detecting something in their cervix that they had no idea was there in the first place and wouldn't have found out about until it was too late without the screening. So I would just really encourage that this funding be put back into the budget. And thank you for your time.
And thank you, Brooke. Next, we will move to Sarah Hoffman.
Hello, I'm Sarah Hoffman, and I'm here as a concerned citizen and was also a recipient of a cervical health screening at a time when I was uninsured. Because there's a history of cancer in my family, this service was especially important to me, and I'm here to ask that you support the $1.8 million the governor proposed for the Breast Cancer and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program. While we have not yet found a cure for cancer, we do know that early detection programs can help save lives and reduce suffering from cancer. We also know that poor people are at greater risk for late-stage diagnosis and have by far shorter survival times regardless of race. Therefore, I think it's imperative that we continue to support and expand the Breast and Cervical Health Check program in Alaska. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. And for the record, Representative Croft has also joined us. Next, we will move to Terry Schulenthal.
Good evening. My name is Terry Schulenthal, and I'm here tonight to speak on behalf of public broadcasting here in the state of Alaska. I wish to thank the legislature for the bipartisan support that's been demonstrated in maintaining the administration's appropriation of public broadcasting in the budget. Personally, I'm a strong advocate for the public radio system here in our state. Certainly in rural Alaska, in many parts of our state, it's the only source of local news and local and state news. And for me personally, here in Anchorage, where there are other choices, it's one of the finest ways of actually getting some of the rural news. If knowledge is understanding, it's one of the ways that those of us here in the urban parts of Alaska can get a better understanding, I think, of the rural parts of our state. And once again, I'd like to thank you all for the bipartisan support that's been shown.
And thank you, Terry, for your comments. Next, we will go to Pat Luby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP. We have four areas that we'd really like the entire committee to take another look at. One is the restoring the funding for the breast and cervical cancer screening. Now, the Medicare program has finally caught on that it's a good idea to screen for breast and cervical cancer, and now they pay for that screening instead of just paying for the treatment. The program that we have here for younger women, women under 65, works well. We've caught a lot of cancers. A lot of people have been able to go for treatment and have had their lives saved. This program makes sense, and we need to restore the funding for it. We hope that you will. There's three other areas. One of them is to restore the $300,000 for the Pioneer Home staffing. Having those residents in there without adequate staff simply doesn't make sense. We need to make sure that they have the care and the staff that can watch after them. There's also a program called Nursing Home Transition, and it's to take people who are currently in nursing homes who probably don't have to be there and to get them out of those most expensive facilities and to put them back in the community in some type of a home or community situation or assisted living. It saves the state a considerable amount of money, and it's something that we recommend you take another look at. Then there's also the Adult Protective Services General Relief Fund. The people who receive that funding are, in many cases, folks just at the edge. In many cases, they're homeless people. They're people who are near to being homeless. And there's some of the folks, some of our citizens, fellow citizens, that need help the most. Thank you.
And thank you, Pat. Next, we will move on to Dora Moore.
I'm a paranavigator for the FAS Diagnostic Clinic here in Anchorage. I'm speaking on behalf of the children, parents, grandparents, and caretakers of children that are affected. Because of lack of education, prevention, and intervention, we have some of our kids that are in foster care, North Star Hospital, McLaughlin Center, treatment centers both in and out of state, and our adult FAS people are in jail because of lack of education and money. Since FAS is 100% preventable, the money allocated for 2006 on Hospital 66, 1.5 is not enough to do education, early intervention, prevention in the school system, diagnostic clinics, and for our young teens that really need the education. So you could have 100% healthy children in the future. The support is very much needed for parents and caretakers of children that have FAS clinics. So our kids don't have to leave their homes or go into foster care. We have 100% healthy babies born. That can be stopped. So on behalf of all the children that are FAS affected, we need to retain their money for 2006. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Moore. Next, we will move on to Tamara Russell.
I'm Tamara Russell. I'm a child and adolescent psychologist here in Anchorage. Work for a local agency on the FAS diagnostic team. And we have found over the last year or 2 years a great increase in the number of requests for evaluations. Our services statewide are shrinking as the funding that Senator Ted Stevens got from the federal government is being reduced. And one of the things that we do know is that while this problem is 100% preventable, it is increasing in our state because of lack of prevention services. We also know that with appropriate diagnosis and intervention, though it's individuals with FASD, are less of a drain on our education services, on our legal system, on our healthcare system, and on their families, and they have the potential to be very productive citizens. Here in Anchorage, unfortunately, only our Alaska Native and American Indian children can get diagnostic services. They're not available for non-Native children in Anchorage. I would like to encourage us to not only retain the funding, but also to consider some way so that all of our citizens in Alaska who need diagnosis and intervention services have access to it. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Russell, for your comments. Next, we'll move on to Kara Nyquist.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is Kara Nyquist, Director of Advocacy at Covenant House Alaska, and I am here to testify today on behalf of Covenant House and also the Alaska Association of Homes for Children as a collaborative effort for the 18 social service agencies that provide comprehensive services to youth throughout Alaska. We were shocked to hear this week that the HES Budget Subcommittee has removed from the governor's request the $1.1 million designated for FASD prevention and services for individuals. I am testifying today to urge the committee to reinstate that $1.1 million that has been cut from the budget. It was only last month that I testified before the House HES Committee in support of the Bring the Kids Back Home initiative and explained how youth with fetal alcohol syndrome needed a lifespan plan for the many youth in out-of-state residential treatment facilities. We have over 700 youth currently in out-of-state facilities, and we know that that cost the state last year $45 million in Medicaid match, and we know that many of those youth suffer from FASD. The committee members seemed very eager that day to ask Bill Hogan from the Division of Behavioral Health for the state of Alaska many questions regarding the volume of the youth suffering from FASD. So it's surprising to now hear that prevention dollars will be cut. As I testified that day, many of these youth suffer from mental retardation and suffer from depression and other forms of mental illness. These youth have difficulties in school and they often drop out. A study done at the University of Washington followed individuals with fetal alcohol syndrome for 20 years and showed that 80% of them ended up living in some type of institutional setting, either through group homes or prison. The number of Alaskans affected by FASD far exceeds the numbers actually diagnosed with this disorder. Providing services for these individuals is extremely costly for the state. These are the youth that are failing in school, who are being seen sent to the out-of-state facilities. They make up a large share of the Department of Health and Social Services OCS caseloads for kids in foster care, and these are the youth working in detention facilities. For example, Covenant House last year had a fetal alcohol prevention grant where we worked with minors who were pregnant and and many of them came to us and said that they realized that they were going to stop drinking or smoking due to the prevention efforts. The Salvation Army also has a Fetal Alcohol Grant, which has allowed them to employ a staff member to speak extensively in the schools and prisons and hospitals and treatment centers. The schools and the Anchorage School District were so pleased with their efforts that they're recently acknowledged in an upcoming publication by the Anchorage School District. And the teachers here in Anchorage have expressed an interest in having more of these prevention efforts accomplished. Alaska cannot continue to fund the cost of providing services to the individuals with fetal alcohol syndrome disorder. We want to stop the suffering it causes, and the circle must be broken. We urge you to reinstate the FASD's dollars, and I thank you for your time and want to mention that I faxed my comments to Representative Stoltz's office earlier today, and it's to be distributed to all the community members. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Nyquist. And we're having a tough time down here hearing some of the testimonies. So after, I'm going to take no, I think I won't, because the static seems to be getting worse. I think maybe we will go to an at-ease and see if the Anchorage LIO could not call us back, and maybe we can get a better connection. So if I can get an okay from the Anchorage LIO to call us back, we'll sit here at ease until we get a better connection than what we have. With that, I'll bring us to an at ease, and we'll try to get a better connection. Thank you. We'll come back to order, and let's try this phone line connection, see if we do have a better connection. With that, we'll ask Anna Atta for her testimony, please.
Hello?
Hello?
Actually, I would like to talk about the FAS grant and everything, and for me personally, I think that's a pretty bad idea what you guys are doing and everything, but people with fetal alcohol symptoms, they got the priorities to know what to do and everything, but some people at FAS have the courage to go through the struggles of rural Alaska and everything. And for me, I got the experience of having all that experience with me and everything as a self-advocate for people first and everything, and for the governor counseling. But for me, I'm speaking on behalf of myself and FAS, because people at FAS don't know the exact stories on how they truly live and everything. And that's all.
And thank you, Ann, for your testimony. We do have a lot better connection than what we had earlier. Next, we will go to Jamie Waste. Go ahead, Jamie.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Jamie Waste. I serve as the executive director of Alaska Public Broadcasting, Incorporated, an Anchorage-based nonprofit organization that provides a variety of support services to the public broadcasting system in Alaska. On behalf of the 26 public radio stations and 4 public television stations serving the bush, rural, and urban people of Alaska, I wish to thank the administration and the legislature for your support of stable funding for public broadcasting in FY06. Community support and involvement has always been at the heart of our local, regional, and statewide non-commercial services. Local ownership and local control of programming remains a top priority within the system. As mass media continues to consolidate ownership, the FCC is now pushing a new debate on the need for preserving and encouraging localism in broadcasting. Our stations provide a remarkable level of local service or localism throughout our state. 95% of all bush, rural, and urban audiences are served by non-commercial public radio services. More than 80% is served by public television services. For many Alaskans, public broadcasting provides the only source of local programming, including delivery of the state and federal emergency alert system. Stations share a long history of working together to provide local, regional, and statewide news and information programming. Many stations dedicate programming to serve children, minority, and Native audiences, including several stations that broadcast some content in the appropriate local Alaska Native language. In addition, some bush stations provide an on-air village message service, a practice unheard of in the lower 48. Bipartisan support of public broadcasting in Alaska is a reflection of the bush, rural, and urban constituents served, listeners, viewers, businesses, and local governments who rely upon the service. More than 32,000 individual Alaskans contribute financial support to public broadcasting, resulting in some of the highest per capita private sector support in America. More than 2,000 people serve as active volunteers, and hundreds of Alaska businesses, from our largest corporate citizens to our small business owners, provide financial support for these community institutions. In closing, stable funding in FY06 is very good news for Alaskans all across the state that rely upon and benefit from these non-commercial services. Thank you for your support, and thank you for taking the time to hear from your constituents.
Thank you, Mr. Waste. And for the record, Representative Wyrock is online with us tonight. He had some other things he had to do, but he has phoned in and is listening to testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, we will go to Patricia Griffin.
Hi, my name is Patricia Griffin. I'm here to ask you not to cut the funding for substance abuse or breast and cervical cancer screening. Because of my addiction to alcohol, I've been relying on a women's recovery program, which has brought me out of my addiction to the point where I could get screening, you know, for my health problems to find out, which I did when found out that I had cervical cancer. And it wasn't for these programs, I would never I'd still be out drinking. I wouldn't know about the cervical cancer, you know, in my life, and then my children wouldn't probably have a mother right now. But I'm just asking you not to cut these programs because of my own personal use with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Also, for the record, we have Representative Jewell. Next to testify will be Mary Kat Keith.
Hello, my name is Mary Kosky, and I am the founder of the Between Us Project, which provides emotional support for breast cancer, newly diagnosed breast cancer patients. I am a 13-year survivor myself, and I'm here, of course, on behalf of House Bill 67 to encourage you to please support this. Not only does early detection save lives, but it saves a lot of money. And I can give you my own example. I was underinsured at the time that I thought I might have a lump and was not properly diagnosed for 1 year. That 1 year made approximately a $50,000 difference in my life. It went from being a simple lumpectomy and radiation to a full mastectomy and a full regimen of chemotherapy. It also meant that I lost my fertility and had to deal with all those issues, which are enormously expensive if you wish to pursue parenthood after losing your fertility. So I urge you to please not be penny wise and pound foolish when it comes to this. I know that it's a lot of money to ask for, but it will, in the long run, be a very wise decision. Thank you.
And thank you, Mary. Next we have Emily Neenan.
Good afternoon. This is Emily Neenan. I'm the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society. Pleased to be here today. Want to thank the committee for the continued support for the tobacco control program. And I'm here to talk specifically about the $1.8 million in the governor's request for the breast and cervical cancer early detection program. This health check program has proven tremendously successful, screening thousands of women each year. I had a conversation earlier today with the office manager in my office because she was telling me, or I overheard in the office, that somebody had just called. A young woman had called, said she had found something she was concerned about, didn't have insurance, didn't have the means to go to the doctor on her own, and was wondering what to do. She was referred into this program. The program will decide if she meets the eligibility guidelines. I asked my office manager, how many of these calls do you get? Because I wanted to ask her more details about it. She said, oh, we get these calls all the time. She said, oh, we get several of them a week. I want to point out that the health check program does do screening for women ages 18 to 64. But the mammograms are only done through this program on women aged 50 to 64. So if a woman is between the ages of 40 and 49, which is the American Cancer Society guidelines call for screening mammograms to start at age 40, the woman is falls in those in that range under 50, and either has their doctor wants to refer them to a screening mammogram or they just meet the regular guidelines. Those people are referred to the American Cancer Society, and we run a program that, through some grant funds and through our funds, pays for the mammograms for the women in this program, age 40 to 49. So I feel really confident coming here today to say we're doing our part. The program has been tremendously successful, has needs of expanding into underserved areas, and encourage your support for this program. Thank you.
And thank you for your comments. Next, we will go to Katie Alley.
Good evening. My name is Kathy Alley, and I'm a planner with the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. And I have testimony from the Governor's Council today that I'd like to read, and it's two additional letters that I will be leaving here for them to fax down to you. One from the Consumer Task Force that serves the Real Choice Grants, and the other one from an individual on our council. The Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education fully supports the inclusion of funds in the FY06 budget to allow individuals to transition out of a nursing facility and into the community in which they belong. Alaska's Nursing Facility Transitions Project began in 2001 using funds from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. To date, funds from this project have allowed 80 individuals to transfer out of a nursing facility and back into their own community. The annual cost to keep these 80 individuals in a nursing facility would be over $10 million. In contrast, the annual cost for home and community-based waiver services for these 80 individuals is $4,047,190. This translates to a $6,543,422 savings from transitioning these 80 individuals back into their community. Unfortunately, funding for this project will cease on September 30th of this year, and many of the initial transition services that this program provides are not covered under Medicaid. Therefore, a general fund increment is vital in order to continue to offer the service as an option. The Olmstead decision requires states to place individuals with disabilities in community settings rather than institutions when appropriate. It is known that services provided to individuals in a community setting are more cost effective than providing the same services in an institutional setting. More importantly, individuals are able to live in their own communities surrounded by friends and family. In order to provide this opportunity to others, we are asking that you support Governor Murkowski's request to fund this valuable service, and this is signed by our chair, Beth Edmonds. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony, Kathy. Next, we will move on to Lisa Pierce.
Good evening. My name is Lisa Pierce, and I'm here as a concerned citizen. I'm here to encourage you to keep the funding for substance abuse prevention, alcohol syndrome prevention, and cervical and breast cancer screening. It is estimated that a lifetime cost to care for one individual with fetal alcohol syndrome is $1.5 million. Which would cost for the estimate costs, including medical costs, behavior management, residential services. The economic and social consequences of not continuing prevention, education, and diagnostic services are serious. A study from the University of Washington showed that across the full range of individuals with fetal alcohol syndrome, there was a study group of 415. 94% of these individuals had mental health problems, 45 had inappropriate sexual behavior, 43 had disrupted school experiences, and 42% had trouble with the law. Prevention services will help reduce costs in the long run. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Pierce. Next, we move on to Pat Cochran.
Hi, my name is Pat Cochran, and while I work for Volunteers of America, I come today just as an Alaskan and not in my professional hat. I am an Alaskan, and my grandparents came when Anchorage was a tent town, and I feel like this is my state. I do work in the field of prevention, whether that's substance abuse prevention, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders prevention, and I can feel like I can speak for prevention of cervical and breast cancer as well. Prevention is critical. It's who we are and what we're going to become. I would not want to be in your shoes and try to sort through the finances and pick and choose. And yet I feel so passionately about this area that I come to ask you to retain the money, to not cut it, that if you want the fiscal matters to make sense and to balance, please don't cut this. It's a savings today that results in a huge cost down the road, whether it's in substance abuse, alcoholism, addiction, the children of alcoholics and addicts, whether it's in the criminal justice system, in our healthcare system. alcoholism and addiction leads to, you know, all sorts of other problems, including the kids that end up with the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and their costs down the road. I hate to bring it to you in only money figures because I know these people individually and it really does make a difference. But I know that that's your responsibility, is to make the finances work. So please don't think that, you know, don't be fooled by saving a few million right now into thinking that's going to solve anything, because the cost down the road will be horrific. That's in dollars. The tragedy in their lives will even be worse. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Cochran. Next, we have Shelley Coolidge.
Good evening. My name is Shelley Coolidge, and I'm urging you to reinstate the enhanced funding for the Breast and Cervical Health Check program as proposed by Governor Murkowski at $1.8 million. I'm a registered nurse working in a very large diagnostic imaging center in the area of breast diagnostic studies, and a very large part of my time is spent talking to women by phone, ensuring that they receive follow-up care or referrals for treatment. I coordinate a breast cancer support group and a breast cancer conference for healthcare professionals. I'm in contact daily with women diagnosed with breast cancer and speak to you as a concerned healthcare worker. Today alone, I talked with a young woman seeking financial assistance because at the time she's diagnosed with her breast cancer, she's found that it's also spread to her bones. And another woman suffering from dizziness and imbalance because of the breast cancer that spread to her brain and her liver. I'm particularly saddened by the recent story of a woman who ignored her breast lump for over a year because she changed jobs and her new job didn't have insurance and she couldn't afford private insurance. By the time she presented, her cancer had spread, resulting in more extensive treatment, more expensive treatment, and a poorer prognosis for her and her family. More and more women are finding themselves in this gal's situation without access to routine health care because they don't have access to insurance. Some women say they've always had insurance until their job was downsized, or they just can't find another job that offers the coverage. Private insurance is very expensive and provides only catastrophic coverage with high deductibles. Those families or individuals paying this premium often can't afford to also pay for preventive care out of pocket. So women go without a pap smear, they go without a breast exam, and they go without a mammogram, all tests that could save their lives. The Breast and Cervical Health Check program offers screening to women who otherwise can't afford the services, with the goal of early detection, therefore early treatment, thus saving the lives of Alaska women. Please provide access to these women for routine health care by reinstating the proposed $1.8 million for this valuable program.
Thank you, Ms. Coolidge. Next, we'll move on to Brian Connors.
Good afternoon, good evening. Thank you. My name is Brian Connors, and I am Director of Community Development Division at the Rural Alaska Community Action Program, or RuralCAP. I guess I come before you today, first I'll say, as a son of a breast cancer survivor, and encourage you to support the governor's request for funding for breast cancer screening. As a professional, I come to you to tell you a little bit about our fetal alcohol spectrum disorders program. It's called the Early Decisions Program. We are attempting to empower low-income people, especially people in populations where they are most vulnerable in rural Alaska, to eliminate FASD in their community and to help community members achieve their full human potential. The Early Decisions Project consists of developing, testing, and refining and distributing individual FASD prevention tools, including a video, a teaching unit, a computer game for youth, and a website for use by service providers, healthcare providers, and high school and middle school students across the state. The teaching unit is called Early Decisions, Addressing Alcohol and Its Effect on the Unborn Child. And it has a target audience of youth who are at risk to use alcohol and therefore contribute directly or indirectly to fetal alcohol exposure. Prevention requires that individuals understand and make safe choices about substance abuse and sexual activity. The best way to prevent FASD is to educate as many community members as possible about the risks of drinking alcohol during pregnancy, creating a culture that discourages risky drinking and provides meaningful support for women at risk. Over the last 5 years, we've worked very hard to develop premium prevention tools to assist the statewide FASD prevention program. We've worked with many of the partners that you've seen today and heard today in this room. Now is the time to turn our full attention to hard marketing and complete and thorough training specifically for Alaska's communities and youth. Our products have received excellent reviews, and our prevention project's traction is well established. I thank you in advance for your continued support of prevention and FASD funding as proposed by Governor Murkowski. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Connors. Next, we have Vera Pachecki.
My name is Vera Pachecki. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I think you were calling my name.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm here on behalf of women. I have, representing myself and my interest in women's health, women's recovery, and certainly personal interests and personal stories, which I won't get into. And I'm here to urge you to not cut funding from House Bill 67 that relates to substance abuse prevention, fetal alcohol syndrome prevention work, and breast and cervical cancer screening. And I'll just speak briefly to each of these issues. And I have with me, actually, these are data sheets which are from the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, and I will read this information back to you, so it is very much available to you. With regard to breast and cervical cancer screening in Alaska, I have learned that 6,500 women per year are being screened, and early diagnosis and early intervention can make a huge difference in mortality for these women. We know that breast cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer among women in Alaska and the United States as a whole. Many deaths from breast and cervical cancers can be avoided by increasing cancer screening rates among women at risk. And in fact, breast cancer has a higher rate in Alaska than in the country. And this data sheet would give you the figures on that. Deaths from these diseases occur disproportionately among women who are uninsured and underinsured. And I think we heard some stories today of women struggling with that disparity. Mammography and pap tests are underused by women who have no source or no regular source of health care. Women without health insurance, and women who immigrated to the United States within the last 10 years. And the economic issue around this, and I know that this is what you are struggling with at this time, is that the economic consequences of detection in late stage of disease as opposed to an earlier, more treatable stage include greatly elevated costs of treatment and lower quality of life and increased mortality. So it really puts the women who would miss out on this at risk of not being able to live their life, the personal loss to their life, but also as productive members of the community. With regard to substance abuse prevention, and that ties right in with fetal alcohol syndrome, Alaska is known for leading the nation in fetal alcohol syndrome, and we have very serious alcohol and drug addiction issues in this state and are known for that, unfortunately. And that is in itself a reason to invest in prevention and treatment on these issues. Fetal alcohol syndrome and other effects of maternal drinking during pregnancy is one that is completely 100% preventable. And that's why it is so tragic when we
feel that we can't afford to address this problem. There are so many children, and there are adult women who have been affected as children, and they are having children who are affected, and the programs that have been created to follow and diagnose and develop interventions for children with fetal alcohol syndrome are making a huge impact. And it does take time because not all the symptoms of fetal alcohol syndrome or fetal alcohol effects are apparent immediately after birth. But, and I know that Ms. Pierce quoted you the price of that it costs approximately, and but this estimate was from 1999, and we know costs have gone up a great deal. $1.5 million for one child, and that doesn't even include all the costs, and that doesn't talk about the emotional costs and the family costs and the other costs and losses. But so in 1999, the figure on this this data sheet, which I got from the state, there were there was an estimated cost of $42 million in just 1 year for children born with fetal alcohol syndrome this year. So if you're looking at the monies that you're thinking about cutting out, it's probably less than raising one child with fetal alcohol syndrome. And I know we've talked about that today in here, is trying to solve something in the short term, but creating a huge bill and huge financial and social consequences for the future. Thank you very much.
And thank you again for your testimony. Next, we will move to David O'Brien.
Hello, my name is David O'Brien. I'm testifying as a concerned citizen. I've worked in the field of cancer for the last 6 years. I have an aunt who died of breast cancer. I have a friend who was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 35 and is currently finishing treatment. Without an early detection program, she may have died like my aunt. I urge the committee to support the governor's $1.8 million request for the breast and cervical cancer early detection program. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Next, we'll move to Tammy Eller.
Tammy Eller's not here right now.
Say again, please. She's not there right now? Okay.
That is correct.
We will move to Cheryl Scott. Cheryl, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Please go
thank
ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak in front of the Health Finance Committee. My name is Cheryl Scott. I'm here representing both my family, specifically my son Justin, who is scheduled as the next speaker, and the families that I work with through the FAS Parent Support Project that is currently funded through the federal FASD prevention grant that we have in the state. A little bit about my son first and my own personal interest. We adopted Justin when he was 3.5. He had been with us since he was about 5 months old. He was a preemie, born at 26 weeks gestation with significant prenatal alcohol exposure. He just turned 18 on March 4th, and his diagnoses at this time include fetal alcohol syndrome, cerebral palsy, mental retardation. He is deafblind, he has a cleft palate, and he has a seizure disorder. It's not your turn yet. These disabilities came about through that prenatal alcohol exposure. Needing to get Justin the services that he required to be as successful as he is at this point led me into the work that I'm now doing with parents across the state. I currently am working with about 90 parents, both birth, adoptive, and foster parents in various capacities in communities all across Alaska, as well as being linked to families across the country and in Canada. There's a wide range of services that our program offers to families, and we've found that it's a very effective way to work with parents who have been trained to understand the disability and the manifestations it can include, supporting other families as their children are being diagnosed and as they're learning more about the disability, so that we can help their children lead as successful and as independent a life as possible as they get older. So I'm here to urge you to support the inclusion of funding for fetal alcohol spectrum disorders prevention. Keep that effort that we've worked so hard on for the last 5 years going. And in addition, having a son who, as a result of his multiple disabilities and his adoption, has been able to qualify for Medicaid assistance. He's now turned 18, and in the next couple of years, we'll be looking at him transferring from a Medicaid waiver that provides him a wide range of services as a child with complex medical needs to an adult Medicaid waiver. I'm very concerned about how that's going to impact his ability to access needed services and equipment. My son Justin is going to speak next. Justin uses a voice augmentative communication device in order to speak, and so if you wouldn't mind, we'll get that set up and then he'll give his testimony.
You bet, and once again, thank you, Ms. Scott.
Thank you.
And next, when you're ready, Justin, we'll take your testimony.
My name is Justin Scott. I am FAS. It is hard for me to learn new things. I like to go to FAS camp. I like to play with my friends there. They have FAS too. Please help us.
All right, Justin, and we do appreciate your testimony that you've given us here tonight. Next, we will move to Heather Amy Scott. Heather, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Please proceed with your testimony.
My name is Heather Amy Scott, and I'm here today as a foster parent for a child who has possible FAS. His birth parents are also alcohol affected, and they were teenagers when Curtis was born. His mother cannot find an effective treatment program to suit her needs, and his father is currently in a halfway home to finish out his jail term. Without effective treatment programs for them, they may lose their son. Substance abuse prevention programs would prevent other teens from having to have to go through the same outcomes and possibly losing their children also. Thank you.
And Ms. Scott, thank you for your testimony. Has Tammy Eller came back yet?
No, Mr. Co-Chair, she's not here at the present time.
Okay. Is there anybody else in the office that would like to testify?
Yes, it appears we have one more testifier.
Please, if they'll give us their name and give us their testimony, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Torgerson. I'm a member of the board of Alaska Public Telecommunications, Inc., and about a year ago at this time, I was a member of the board of APRN. In that capacity, over a period of several years, I've worked with the board of APTI and the board of APRN to help put public radio and now public communications generally on stronger footing in Alaska. I think those efforts were largely successful. We were able to cut some of the expense of producing the programming that is available on public radio and public television, produce what we're told are better programs and do it while preserving a focus on statewide programming. I don't say that to be self-congratulatory, but to make two points. The first is that those of us involved with public radio and public television in the state take very seriously the responsibility to provide those services across the state, and take very seriously the charge that we have to use well the public funds that are provided in support of those programs. That's the first point. The second point is to say thank you to the legislature as well as to the administration for the support that it's provided to public radio and public television in the past. We appreciate it very much, and we'll continue to do our best to use those funds well. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Torgerson, for your testimony. Are there any other public members in Anchorage that would like to testify?
Not at this time.
All right. We don't show that there's anybody else up in Anchorage. So before I bring, it is currently about 10 to 6. Before I bring the meeting to a close, I would like to announce that tomorrow afternoon, starting at 1:30, we will be accepting public testimony from 1:30 to 3:30 from Juno. We will take a break between 3:30 and 4:30, and then we will come back at 4:30 through 6 o'clock to have public testimony from Fairbanks area.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for allowing me to participate telephonically.
Oh, and thank you, Representative Wyrock, for participating. And so, if there is no other public person in Anchorage who would like to testify, we will close down the teleconference, and we will adjourn the meeting and come back tomorrow afternoon at 1:30 for public testimony. With that, thank you to all the participants in Anchorage, and thanks to the committee members for being here. With that, I'll bring the meeting to a close.